The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, February 12th, 2016. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. Oh, it's casual Friday. Weakest, longiest, I would have to say about this week. I'd say it differently if I knew any Latin. TGIF, as we used to say, when it was time to choose what kind of great dinner we wanted at a fine restaurant. Oh, God, I'm giddy. I'm so excited. I've been horribly sick all week. I've been constantly exhausted. And what a week. Another Democratic debate last night, ladies and gentlemen. On the program today, the great Cliff Schechter, to look back at that debate. And, of course, was it really only 3 days ago? The New Hampshire primaries. That's crazy. It seems like it was months ago. Meanwhile, our national nightmare is over. Finally, those militants in Oregon have all, they haven't surrendered, they turned themselves in. Unfortunately, no one else was injured. New polls out. Trump, Sanders, strengthening nationally. We'll see what it means. 8 days in Nevada. Apparently, the new Ted Cruz app sucks up just about all of your information possible. And there's a seeping understanding of who made Donald Trump. Meanwhile, John Kerry may be one of the best Secretary of States this country has seen in generations. We'll see. Within a week, supposedly parties have agreed in Munich to a ceasefire in Syria. That means a week of continued bombing by Russian aircraft and a siege on Aleppo and perhaps the destruction of anything that remains of a Syrian rebellion that is not ISIS, more or less. But we shall see. Meanwhile, Texas is trying to classify their detention centers holding Central American children into child care centers so they can get around a judge's order to improve the conditions there. Just unbelievable. And we have some really heartwarming footage of a plant supervisor announcing that their plant is closing. It's sort of amazing it's not so much the callousness, it's like the sort of the tin earness. I mean, I think people have experienced this all before. I mean, I remember, we'll play the audio later in the program. Oh, I should also tell you that also joining us today is Mark Maroon, who is the host of a podcast called WTF, or WTF, I think it is. It's a weird name for a show. But
is it an NPR thing?
I don't know.
Community radio?
It's some type of show-busy thing. Some type of fluff piece. But my understanding, he's a nice young man. So we'll have Mark Maroon on the program later. Also, just a bit of house cleaning. Next week is my daughter's, and actually now my son's, vacation week. And as such, I will be taking that vacation week and being a full-time daddy. But we will have all new shows for you every day week. Michael will be here on Monday, since he is childless and barren.
And barren? Wow.
Buddy, if you think you've gotten away with it this long, chances are you got nothing.
Jesus Christ, dude. I'm going to step off of this.
He will be here on Monday. And then on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we will have all new content. So, you know, it's really basically not really a vacation. We load up, we double up. And just a little bit of a hint, we're going to have some Marxist political theory. We're going to have some sassy dog puppets. That's the range in which we go on this program.
Not plural, though.
No, one. Okay, Triumph. Triumph is just, he's just one.
You know what someone asked when I interviewed Ronnie Cusrells? The first I am was like, why didn't you do Right Wing Mandela for him?
I was like, why wouldn't you do that?
That is the perfect distillation of this show, though.
Right.
Why didn't you do the offensive Nelson Mandela impression to the iconic freedom fighter that you were interviewing?
I know what a woman from Donald Trump's audience would say.
Yeah, clearly.
Well, and I'm not going to say that.
It's a very terrible thing.
No, we've got a lot of some great interviews for you. Next, we'll have Adam Green will be on talking about this dynamic about Social Security. We may touch on it with Cliff, but I mean, we got to create a bunch of other great interviews for you. So, and also a reminder: this show cannot exist without your support. That's how we do it here. There is many different models. Business models out there, but because of the nature of this program, advertising is never going to be our premier one. So what we do is we are supported almost about 98%, 97% by our members. And as a bonus, we say, hey, we've got another like 40, 50 minutes of almost an entirely different type of show for you. And we give that to you. And also, if we do have a commercial in the first half of the program, we take that out. And so that's what we do. Become a member today. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off of great coffee delivered directly to your door. Also, do you buy from jet.com? Do you want to try it out? Go to majorityreportkickback.com. Click on the jet.com link. Make sure your ad blocker is off. For some reason, we can't see it if you have your ad blocker on. Click on that link, and I think your first purchase is 15% off. It's the first time you've tried Jet. I think they still have that going. Or if you buy your crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. Oh, all right. I just got this from my app. WTF Pod stands for Will Train Felines. It's a podcast about training feral cats. It's very useful. All right, well, that's good to hear. All right, we're going to take
quick, Phoenix.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter.
We'll be right back.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is Casual Friday, and this is the Majority Report. My name is Sam Cedar, and what you're about to hear is this.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, Cliff Schachter from LibertasLLC.com. Cliffy, it is another Friday. We have had another Democratic debate. We have had another week of primary results. It is relentless. On Saturday night, we have a Republican debate, which unfortunately we will not be covering here live anyways. I can't believe that New Hampshire was 3 days ago.
I know, it's kind of wacky, isn't it? The process seemed to be speeding up somewhat to you.
You know, it's fascinating. I was thinking about this, and I was saying, "Oh, okay." The reason why this is so intense this year is because there's two. You don't have an incumbent, but then I thought, you know, it was the exact same situation in 2008. And it didn't seem as intense to me for some reason, although maybe it was because I wasn't doing a daily show. I don't know. It just seems like there is a relentlessness to this on some level.
Well, it may also be because you're dealing with similar intensity at your job on you know, whenever you showed up there.
Right. I do. I mean, I think that's...
It was like a campaign atmosphere at Air America.
Well, in 2008, that's right. But I think I was actually, I was remote during the campaign. I think so.
Well played by you.
Yeah, that was very well played by me, actually.
In all seriousness, though, I mean, I remember it getting really. I've done my best to stay out of the whole thing. I mean, I cop to what my preferences are here and there, but I won't get involved in the online wars and the fighting back and forth because, frankly, I like both of these people. And I think they both have strengths in our world better than anything on the other side, which may be something worth talking about a little bit today, because I'm not sure that everybody out there knows exactly how right-wing John Kasich is. You know, when we get to the Republican side, maybe we don't have to talk about it very much. But, I mean, even the people that are sort of running as the so-called moderates, you know, with the more sunny, you know, vision of the future, not the apocalypse that Ted Cruz brings us, are still people that are incredibly, incredibly out of the American mainstream on most important issues. And so, you know, I'm just not playing it this time. I remember in 08, I was an Obama person, and, you know, the being accused of sexism and other things. And it's not to say it's not out there, and it's out there again this time, and there's many other isms out there, too, on all sides. But, you know, I'd like to think, and I try to do a self-auditing when I can, I like to think that really what appealed to me was some of the things President Obama was then Senator Obama was saying.
Right.
But it didn't matter, you know. I got pulled into it. I had one or two people who had been friends who literally one person who had an email list I'd been on was sending these conspiratorial emails about Obama that I found to be rather sickening, repeating all sorts of talking points that the right was cooking up and, you know, about the former radical guy that lives in Chicago who Obama
Bill Ayers.
Went to his house for fun. Yeah, like that kind
of
crap.
I mean, let's
right?
be honest. President Obama was never fully vetted about that.
No, not at all. Or Jeremiah Wright. I still think they're planning a goddamn America takeover or something of that sort.
I have to say that I've been I think the way I used to express my disappointment about President Obama was that he wasn't actually listening. In those, he wasn't actually in the pews listening to Jeremiah Wright, which turned out.
Well, it's because he was a Muslim, so right. Obviously he was faking going to these Christian. He didn't care what the hell that guy was saying. He was busy facing east a couple times a day. In any case, no. I mean, I'm just saying. Like, overall point, I won't get into this. I mean, because I remember that woman basically who did that really getting angry at me and, you know, calling me all sorts of names. I'm like, really, we're doing this, you know? And so I won't. But it's intense. And I heard there was a new poll out you can tell me if I'm right or wrong. And again, polls, take them with a grain of salt, no matter who they show winning and whatever, that shows Hillary and Bernie very close in Iowa. I mean, sorry, in Iowa.
Well,
yeah, very close in Iowa.
That would be accurate. Yeah,
we should just go back to Iowa. Let's just keep rerunning it. No, in Nevada, that you know, and it's a caucus, so that gives him. I mean, man, he pulls an upset there. I think then he'll even make, in terms of not, you know, in terms of my objective stance on who I think can win, he may even convince me he's got a good shot at winning. Because that, I mean, the momentum out of that, you know, I know she's got a huge lead in South Carolina, but. Well, in any case, I don't know. I know we were going to talk about Republicans first, so maybe I'm screwing up the whole thing here.
All right, well,
you tell me what to talk about, Tim, and I'll talk about it.
I think we talked about Democrats first last time. So let's talk about Republicans first this time. And let's not spend too much time on the Republicans because I think there this dynamic in the Democratic race is also fascinating. And it is so. Let's just review the results, obviously, from New Hampshire.
I almost got you to say Iowa, too.
Right. Trump and then Kasich. And let's talk about Kasich, although I think this is the last we're going to be mentioning Kasich's name in any serious way.
I'm pretty sure that's
way.
Correct, too.
And then you had Bush and Rubio and Cruz. And we should also just mention, bye-bye Chris Christie. Let's start with here so that we can just get our gloating out of the way. There is nothing more, I have to say, there's nothing more that I find more satisfying, and I will concede that I will find it more satisfying when he's indicted. But
yes, me too.
To have him,
I'm still saying that I think that will happen eventually. I'm on the record there.
Me too.
Go ahead.
To have him say his salutations via Facebook, what a coward.
He's the definition of every bully that anybody listening to this ever ran into. It's just a classic, you know, overreaction to cover up insecurities, because what small people bullies always really are and what they really think of themselves. How classic. The man can't even give any kind of a speech to thank the people that actually still decided, once he shut down a bridge, he was worthy of their attention, money, votes. Just sneaks out of town and goes back to New Jersey. I mean,
says his goodbyes on Facebook. Just unbelievable.
I mean, he's pathetic, and he's always been pathetic. And he's, you know, I said this to you in another venue when we were talking. I feel like, you know, that has been the worst job of media vetting maybe since George W. Bush. He got away with basically, you know, his people played the media. It's become very clear that he kisses up and calls them and you know, and gets together with them and does whatever he can to win over media coverage. One of the few groups of people he actually treats well until, of course, they criticize him and then he hates them. But, you know, he did that in New Jersey. He took some more moderate stances because he happened to be in the state of New Jersey, where you cannot win as a Republican, being an actual right-wing nut. So, you know, he moderated on civil unions and on guns and a variety of other things. He presumed around Obama at Sandy Hook, but I will still say that was because Mitt Romney didn't pick him as VP. Everything that man does, that's why he understands the mindset of Republican voters. Everything that man does is based on resentment and hatred. You know, and to this day, I will say, I don't care what they say. I don't care. There's no doubt in my mind that right after Romney doesn't pick him and that thing hits, he hugs Obama and helps Obama purposely as a sticking up his middle finger at Mitt Romney, because that's the kind of guy he is. And with the, you know, Beyond the Bridge episode, which I'm sorry, some of the people there have said he knew about, it will get back to him. What the Hoboken mayor has said, what the Jersey City mayor said about him canceling meetings because he wouldn't endorse him. There's 1,000 more cases like that out there. There's him spent, you know, Mr. Tough Guy in corruption, had all the money he spent when he was a prosecutor. He spent the most out of any of the 50 state prosecutors, you know, on 5-star hotels and things where they couldn't explain why he had done it. He had no explanation for why he goes and stays in a $1,500 hotel for a night instead of like a $200 one. So, I mean, he got away with putting out this image, and it was nothing like the reality. The guy is corrupt as hell. He picked who to prosecute based upon who it would hurt. He helped his friends. He got into that office. He's lucky because Corzine was, you know, basically also corrupt and had gotten himself in over his head, and he snuck in at a time. And then Sandy, you know, kind of the way George W. Bush got a second term only because of 9/11, this guy got his second term because of Hurricane Sandy and that image of him. and meanwhile, people there are still suffering. The guy's done nothing. The credit's been downgraded. He spends no time in his state governing, and he's a bully who picks on kids, who goes after women. He's just, I mean, maybe you can tell how I feel about him. No. I just can't stand it, because he got treated like this moderate, you know, reasonable president. I'll just finish and say this one thing, which is character matters. And we've allowed the Republican Party to turn it into something where, you know, character attacks are a negative thing, and if you go after people's character, you're bad. And the truth of the matter is that we should have the character of some of these guys vetted, because some of these people, no matter what their positions are, do not have the proper character or temperament to be president. And he, I don't give a damn what his positions were from the left to the right, he is a classic example of someone who lacks any temperament to be president.
Yeah, and I think that's even putting it nicely. You know, what am I supposed to do? Mop up? Go down with a mop after the floods? I mean, give me a break. But, and I will add one more thing, that the legacy of what he's done to both the pension system in New Jersey and specifically the turning down of those federal funds for that tunnel underneath the Hudson River, that is going to reverberate and going to impact this entire region. I mean, I know this sounds small to people outside of this area, but the implications of when that tunnel under the Hudson has to close down for repairs, there's two of them. When one of them has to close down for repairs, and maybe two of them, when that happens and there isn't that third tunnel, it is going to be disastrous for people who live in New Jersey, and particularly for people who live in New Jersey, more than anything else, but also for the entire sort of for Amtrak going from Boston down to D.C., from going from New York to D.C., it is just going to be, it is just incomprehensible to me that a guy would do that. But all right, so he's gone, and too much of a coward to say goodbye in any other way, because he knew there's going to be a lot of people like us gloating out there, and or even just, you know, I don't know. But good.
In any case, you got him gone. We could talk about him for an hour. And his corruption is everywhere, and I'm sure he will go to prison at some point for a vast. There's any number of things he could. Carly Fiorina gone. I mean, she had her one moment when she sat there and consistently lied about a Planned Parenthood video she saw that doesn't exist, and kept and proved again that truth doesn't matter, and she could just keep claiming it existed, something that does not exist. And seems like after that, I don't know, people lost interest in her, and she didn't even really seem to campaign very hard. My guess is that she wants to be on the gravy trail. You know, she's got to, even though she took a lot of money away from being hugely failed at Hewlett Packard, you got to keep that lifestyle up somehow. So maybe that was it. Who knows? But I didn't really see much of a real campaign. So she's gone. All right, Bush is still in it.
So let's talk about this. Let's hold off on Trump for a moment. Kasich. Tell people about Kasich. I mean, he is the governor of Ohio. He is the one guy who, I think early on we thought, I don't want to speak for Michael, but I definitely thought this guy could be a sleeper. But then it became clear how much I was less impressed with him when I saw him to speak, but how much animosity there was towards him for expanding Medicaid, which is just almost sounds nonsensical to say. I know the idea of
but they're Christians.
Right. I mean, he really embraced it. His whole idea was like, you know, there was that moment where he was in the Koch brothers retreat where he called out a donor who was like, how could you expand Medicaid? And he said, look, when I go to heaven and St. Pete is there or Jesus or who, I don't know who's supposed to be in
whoever
heaven.
He expects to meet.
Yeah,
he gets up there and plays a basketball game with a couple angels.
It depends, I think, on what time of day you go up there as to who greets you, because they have different shifts.
True.
But nevertheless,
St. Peter's got to take a nap like everybody else.
Right. It's like whoever's, you know, the afternoon doorman, the evening doorman, the all night doorman, or check in you know, at a Motel 6 type of thing. And he said, I've got to answer to the way that I treated poor people or something like that. And of course, the people got offended at the retreat and walked out
as they're eating their foie gras at the $1,500 or $2,500 a plate or whatever the hell it was.
And so
they walked outside, they punched somebody who was homeless and had their car brought to them.
He at the very least expresses some human empathy, and which apparently is just deadly in the context of the Republican Party. But his policies, and I've heard from people too that he's got very good relationships with the African American community in Ohio, that he's like, he speaks in a very reasonable way, But his policies are incredibly vicious towards, I mean, this guy is basically Scott Walker. If Scott Walker realized, like, human beings actually have, you know, are warm-blooded, you know what I mean? And then we've got to speak in a certain
Scott
way.
Walker.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Scott Walker didn't shed his skin at midnight.
Right.
You know, basically, I mean, Kasich has pulled a great one because he's made it seem like he's created this great economy, and people have to remember when he came in, of course, things were on the upswing in general. I mean, you know, where to start? He's passed 17 abortion restrictions, shut down 5 of the 14 clinics, left 3 major, you know, urban, suburban areas, metro areas with 1 clinic, and tried to shut those down, including where I'm in Cincinnati, which would make it the largest area in the country, metro area, you know, 2.5 million or so without one. You name it. He's done it on, but he doesn't have the courage to do it, you know, out in the open. So he attaches it to budget bills so he can sign it in the middle of the night and try to get out of town before he. So they love him on the anti-choice nuts, love him, but he again doesn't have the courage of his convictions to come out and do it. And you name it, the ultrasounds, the demeaning lectures that women have to be given beforehand, the waiting period, the you know, watch the you know, the sonogram. You must look. I mean, all this just disgusting sexist garbage. He has passed every single one of it. They've just defunded Planned Parenthood here. He's happily said he'll sign that. That'll be the 18th anti-choice bill he's passed here. He's turned us basically into something resembling Texas on this issue. And it's mostly been him. I mean, obviously the state legislature has signed it. Guns. This is a guy that supported the assault weapons ban when he was in the House, was somewhat reasonable on the issue. He's put guns in bars. He cut down that onerous 12 hours that you had to get training to get a concealed carry permit. Obviously, that's way too much time, so he cut that down to 8 hours. You know, he allowed, one of my favorite ones, he legalized silencers for hunting. Because clearly you don't already have the kind of advantage you need over a deer when you have an AR-15. You want those first few shots, in case you miss, to be silent. I mean, just idiotic and stupid and dangerous, and especially guns and bars. Charter schools, we're like a laughing stock of the country. He's a big privatizer. He privatized schools. He cut $500 million, $500 million out of our public schools here. He's given something like 60 billion, I believe. I mean, some ridiculous number to these various privatizers, various companies that do charter schools, and the money is like missing. In a lot of cases, it's been, you know, schools have shut down. His own head of the Department of Education had to leave here, resign in scandal because the guy was fudging test scores.
Wow.
But he also privatized the jobs and development part of the state here, and what do you think he's done? All the money that's gone there, magically tax incentives go to big businesses and whatever who donate to John Kasich. I mean, there's no transparency. Even the state auditor here, who's Republican, has gone after him. I mean, he's a right-winger, where he's a privatizer. He's been socially, ridiculously right-wing.
Dumped a lot of people off of food stamps, too, didn't he?
Yes, he did that on top of it. I mean, it's hard to get to all of them. He freezed renewable standard, you know, energy standards here so that we couldn't put more funding into more renewables. I mean, and, you know, he got rid of our inheritance tax because you wouldn't want really rich people, so we don't have one now. And again, you know, with privatizing, with all this stuff, I mean, he has led, you know, on all these right-wing issues. And for some reason, probably that he's been more quiet about it. You hear about the Scott Walker, you hear about it. But remember, the bill that where we shut him down on a ballot initiative here, you know, when he went after collective bargaining in the same manner that Scott Walker did, he went after it for teachers and, I mean, for firefighters and police also, which
right.
Walker didn't even have the guts to do. So he's a right-wing nut. And if we were looking at this 20 years ago, he'd be considered somebody to the very far right. It just is a statement about how much the party has changed. So, look, if we're going to live with a Republican president, do I believe that he actually can sit down with people? He did with President Clinton. He has with others. Do I believe he'd tell, you know, some foreign leader to go F themselves in the manner that Donald Trump or Ted Cruz might? I don't. So I suppose if we're going to be stuck with a right-winger, he's probably one of the best ones because he probably won't, you know, blow up the world, at least quickly. But by any measure, he is very, very right wing.
Well, I don't think I don't think a lot of Democrats also know, not only was he at Lehman Brothers, before he was at Lehman Brothers, he was on, what was it, Kasich Country? He was
on Fox. When he first ran for governor, Rupert Murdoch gave $1 million to the Republican Governors Association that was specified to all go to John Kasich. You know, I mean, he's friends with all those guys, Roger Iles. They're all good buddies of his. So that's an important, and so ask yourself if they'd be that good buddies with anybody who is moderate.
So, I mean, the interesting thing is that he is, for all that, he is toxic. I mean, this, you see, this has been the thesis that I have been harping about for so long. Last night I was on Hayes' show and was talking about Trump, and every time I go on, it's basically just, it is, it's my mantra. I'm like Rubio in a way. I'm like a machine. You ask me any question.
It's like you, Rubio, and the Terminator.
Exactly.
You don't switch course. You don't, nothing changes. You don't have compassion.
It only occurs to me that, that as we talk about, Kasich and that his chances in this primary are so undervalued that during his speech, right? I mean, you know how much Fox hates Trump. During the speech of the guy who came in second, by not a mile, but by like a half a mile.
He came in second. Out.
Yeah, I mean, more so the next three guys.
35 to 16, so he got more than doubled.
Right, but the next three guys were like 3 points behind him, and they were all within like 1 point of each other.
Yep.
They cut away from his speech like 3 minutes in. Fox did. Like MSNBC was still covering the guy. And now this is my point. The thing I keep repeating about Trump is, and Hayes asked me the other night, like, why is it that you got it right with Trump? What do you know about Trump that other people didn't know? And I said, nothing. The only thing that I know that predicted Trump was what is in the minds of people who self-identify as conservative and Republicans.
Exactly. And that you don't hang out at Sally Quinn's parties. You actually think about this stuff.
The point is that you look at what John Kasich has done. His policies have been as conservative and as vicious and as right-wing and as like moving down the line, except for Medicaid, expanding Medicaid. He has ticked off every other
And
box.
I'll give credit. He did one or two other things here. But again, you know, it's like some criminal justice reform. I mean, there have been a few good things he's done.
Right, but that's off the table, right?
There's nobody. Qualify anyone as a moderate. They would qualify somebody as a right-winger, you know, as a conservative 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, but even today. I mean, even if you listen to what anybody says is sort of, you know, all the Ted Cruz positions, I'm sorry. There's, you know, except for Obamacare, right? Except for expanding Medicaid. And he will have no support. He will have no support when he goes down to South Carolina. He'll have no support anywhere else. He's not going to be supported by. And so the point is, it's dispositional. If he spoke Trump with that same record or any other record, he would be doing much better. It is completely dispositional. No,
they want somebody like Trump or Cruz. Or frankly, that's why Chris Christie, even after all the stuff he did, was able to hang in for as long as he was. They want someone who's a loudmouth, who's absolute contempt for people on the other side. They don't want somebody saying similar things to what Barack Obama was saying in 2008, which is what the way Kasich seemingly is trying to sound.
But you know, policy-wise, like Trump is way to his left. I mean, theoretically. I mean,
it's not about policy, and you're exactly right. At this point, these guys define, you know, who said that famous line? It may have been Lee Atwater, was one of them. You know, the politics is about who you hate. Or I mean, even Kevin Phillips, I think, when he put together the Southern Strategy for Nixon. That was his whole mantra, and it was Kevin Phillips. Politics is about who you hate. And he was right on the right, certainly. And they've realized that, and they've gone with it. And so it doesn't matter about, as long as you're pointing out who the enemies are, which Trump is so good at, the Mexicans or the Russians or the Chinese who are taking our jobs, as long as you have an enemy and a bad person that you're going to beat the hell out of, that works on the right. The problem with Kasich is when he sits there and says, our enemies are people, they're people too, and you need to respect them, that falls flat. And one of these days, these guys are going to realize there is no Huntsman Lane, there is no Kasich Lane. That doesn't exist anymore in this party. But he's trying it, and it's hysterical because, again, it's so different than his actual record because, you know, his disposition is a little more that way, although he's been known to have a temper and lash out at people here too, Kasich has been. But his disposition is a little more that way. But also he felt like that was the empty lane that he could get in. But there's just no voters there. You and I have had this conversation many times that when you added up the loudmouth and the crazy vote, you tend to get to somewhere between 60-75%, you know, more towards 70-75%. And the other side, there just aren't enough people there, you know. And so he topped out in New Hampshire. Yes, that message worked at the end because he's good at, very good at retail politicking, and which you can do in New Hampshire.
Well, also,
like
New
Iowa,
Hampshire's, let's be honest. I mean, New Hampshire is not really, I mean, the reason why South Carolina is such a bellwether for the Republicans, it means something different for the Democrats. But the reason why South Carolina is such a bellwether for the Republicans is because there's basically, you have the two strands. To the extent that there's any division in that party, and there is, you have the two strands. One is a sort of like the movement conservative types where, you know, and let's be honest, you know, Trump's portfolio in terms of people we hate is not just Mexicans and Russians and Chinese. It's also women and black people. And it is right. Articulated through this, you know, it is mediated through this anti-PC thing that they have. I mean,
what this clearly is at this point is that what Trump, the language that Trump speaks, the language that the Republican Party, when it's at its most base, has come to speak is the language of Southern resentment. It's the language of the great lost cause. That is where all of this, you know, the strength of the party, which used to be based in Northern industrialism, you know, is now based in Southern resentment, and Southern resentment for Northerners, and Southern resentment for African Americans, for immigrants, for whatever. So you need, you know, that's why South Carolina, you can say John McCain is a black baby, and it helps you. I don't know if it would help. It might help you somewhat in New Hampshire. It might hurt you somewhat in New Hampshire. It's not the same thing.
Right.
And so.
And then there's also a segment of South Carolina.
This is the place of nullification, right?
Right.
This is the very home. Of
12 years ago, they were talking about 12 years ago, they were talking about secession. I mean, I haven't heard as much of that, but and then you also have sort of like the real strong Republican Party apparatus. And this is what I found interesting, because I want to talk about that. We got about another 10. We can go another 10 or so minutes. I want to talk about the Democrats, but I want to just talk about this race because, you know, Trump is in the lead. It's really going to end up. I mean, I think at this point, like it's Cruz and Trump. I, you know, we may see, you know, another run by Rubio, and Bush will hang in there for a long time. And, you know, this debate should be very interesting. But what, you know, Ted Cruz had this ad, and we played it the other day on this program.
Is that the soft porn ad?
No. There's also... That's
so awesome. It couldn't happen to a sleazier guy, could it?
Well, I mean, look, I don't have a problem with a soft porn actress, frankly.
I don't either. She was in some very respectable movies.
Well,
okay?
But regardless... you know, it's just funny for them that
it's funny because it happened to Donald Trump. To Ted Cruz,
right?
And Ted Cruz is the kind of guy Ted Cruz is. That's what makes it funny. I couldn't care less. And frankly, you know, hey, good for her. She has an acting career. I've got no problem with it. I would have liked to have been there at Cruz headquarters to see the reaction.
And the thing is, it was actually a pretty good ad. It was about people who felt betrayed by Marco Rubio. And it was like a support group where they were all talking about how we thought he was some one guy and he turned out to be another. But he has this other ad where there's kids in there and they have like a Donald Trump action figure. And they're like, let's play Donald Trump. He's pretending he's a Republican. And then they go on to talk about all his positions. Now, this is why South Carolina is interesting, because Ted Cruz has been making the argument that he's not a conservative, that Donald Trump is not a true conservative. And of all people in this race, the one guy who you would think would not be making the argument about fealty to the Republican Party would be Ted Cruz, right? Because he's many times said, like, people even in my own party, that's why everybody hates him, because he calls them
out. That's true.
But he knows that he can get a twofer going into South Carolina. He already has the movement people. What he needs to do is shake off anybody who sees Donald Trump as a secret, and they believe this down in South Carolina, that he's a secret Manchurian non-Republican, really just like helping to infiltrate and help Hillary Clinton. It's interesting just that they use the word Republican instead of conservative in that ad.
No, it is.
And it remains to be seen if it'll be help, because we just don't have that much polling coming out of these states.
No, it'll be interesting. I mean, the two other points. Well, one of them I want to make. I can't think of the guy's name, but you may know. Remember the crazy right wing loon on Twitter? Wasn't he the former chairman of the South Carolina Republican Party? either there or, you know, who would go around and making all these unbelievable racist statements. And I can't remember the guy's name. And it became
six or seven Republicans come to mind when you say something like that. So I don't know.
This guy was like, this guy was uniquely famous. It's going to drive me crazy. I'll put it up later. He ended up, of course, getting in trouble for domestic battery with his wife. And I mean, what you'd expect. But, you know, the fact that this has been a mainstream guy in South Carolina Republican politics, and he just threw out the N-word on Twitter, like, you know, regular conversation. I mean, you know, it was, you know, that's, so, yes, this is a different breed of Republican Party. This is, again, very connected right now to the great lost cause, and Cruz can speak that language, and Trump certainly can pretend to speak that language. I think, you know, Kasich simply can't, nor can Bush. The two quick points are here that, you know, about that I wouldn't want to go on without saying are Bush is amazing just in the fact that a guy that spent something like $50 million from the super PAC and God knows how much he spent and whatever got 11%, and that was enough for him to call it a victory and stay in the race.
Right.
So that in of itself is hysterical. He's clearly not meant for this, but we're in the Citizens United age and he's still got a lot of money to spend, I guess. Second of all, the Rubio thing. Because I will take credit and I will take blame when I predict things that are crazy. I will take credit when I predict things that are right. You know, I thought Cruz was going to win Iowa, which, you know, I got right because of various factors. But if I were to ever tell you that I saw this coming with Marco Rubio, I mean, yeah, I remember the you know, when he became like a dog, you know, in a desert drinking water that one time a couple years ago on TV. But I thought he was past that kind of stuff. And to have that sort of moment of freezing and have that do to him what it did to him is amazing, because you know I was thought like everybody else. This is the guy I'm scared to run against, and you know suddenly he's JV. It exactly played into what everybody had been saying about him, that he was no substance and whatever. And those are always the most damaging gaffes you can have. So amazing that he's now, you know, if he doesn't come in, he has to come in top three.
Right,
if he
or he's come done.
In even top two, he's potentially just, that's it.
Michael and I have been saying this about Rubio for a long time. In fact, I got invited by a lawyer, Matthew, one of our loyal listeners, to dinner this weekend. And a guy there who I had a big argument with back in September about Rubio or Cruz. And I was like, it's going to be Cruz over Rubio. And he just thought I was insane. I should have bet him because he owns a store that sells computers, and that would have been, I made a huge mistake.
You totally should have. Because I had people dismissing me too, like, oh, Cruz can't win. And I'm like,
Rubio, I think, you know, very clearly always had this problem of he would speak directly to the camera. He avoided all the conflict, and there was a reason behind that. I was quite convinced. So, Rubio's, what was clear to me is that, you know, after Iowa, and even before then, as it was clear that Bush was bottoming out, you did not see the move, like the big wave. You know, here and there, but you didn't see the big move of the big money donors to unleash their funds with him. And I think that's because they know there's stuff there. I think that whatever was in that folder that Mitt Romney had back in 2012. Other people must know about, and they're afraid to invest in a guy like that. But you know,
that's a great interesting point. Yeah.
I mean, who are they going to invest in? It's going to, you know, but we'll see. All right, we only have 5-6 minutes here, so let's talk about the Democratic debate last night. I think Hillary Clinton did a good job of trying to blur in the lines with Bernie Sanders. I think, you know, Bernie Sanders did fairly well. Although I got to say, like, I don't feel like when I watch these debates now, there's a couple of feelings I have about it, and then I want to just throw it to you. One is that these things get pretty deep in terms of and pretty intricate, that both candidates are in, it seems to me, far better shape for a general election than the Republicans.
Agreed.
I still think that Hillary Clinton has yet to articulate an overarching message that is about her agenda beyond her qualifications. I mean, I think her qualifications are incredibly solid. But I think, like, if she wants to beat Bernie Sanders, she's made that case. People already know her, and she needs to sort of say, not list off four or five policies, what she's going to do. She needs to have just a cohesive narrative about what she's going to do. I think Bernie Sanders got better at foreign policy. He's never going to be where she is at this. I want to talk about the Kissinger exchange, because I thought that was sort of amazing. There was a couple of places where I thought Bernie Sanders sort of could do better, but it's fascinating to see this play out. And I don't know. I saw some tweet from Chris Kofinas. He's a former Democratic strategist type of guy who has a focus group, yep. And he said his focus group showed Bernie winning. And I sort of feel like at this point, like I'm too close to this to get a sense of how people who haven't seen these two debate what.
That's the problem, isn't it? Like we're too. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure either. That's my observations are these. Paul Waldman over at Greg Sargent's place wrote a great piece, which is agrees with me 100%. I agree with him 100%. I should say, and I think you and I have talked about how the thing was is that, you know, this almost the same exact mistake as 2008, which is Hillary Clinton's operation did not have a message. I could not tell you why she wanted to be president, and it's funny because you and I had a conversation a few days ago, and it seemed like. To me, the obvious message from the beginning is what she closed with. And I think that was a summation of it's not quite there yet, because she needs the overarching right. narrative, which is, look, you know, I wasn't always the wife of a president. You know, I came up at a time I had to work, go to law school at a time that not many women went to law school. I had to make it. I encountered sexism on a daily basis. And I'm running for people, you know, who haven't had opportunities, who haven't been afforded equal opportunity, not because of the talents they possess, but because of who they are. And I think if she gets towards that, because she's trying to unite women, African-Americans, and Hispanics, that part of the Obama coalition is the part where she does best. And she certainly should do better among women than she has done. To me, she needs to lead and end with that. I'm not saying, you know, go quite Marco Rubio robot, but she needs to really put that together in this sort of a similar narrative to what I just said, I think. And that needs to be her reason for running. And that's how, frankly, on some things, she gets to the left. Not just an issue you throw out here and there without context, like gun safety, that you make it part of a broader narrative that's out there with voting rights, you know, with immigration reform. And, you know, that's another one of the other issues that Bernie's had kind of a mixed record on is immigration. Yeah. So if she wants to contrast herself, it's that. And just by dint of being a woman, if she's speaking strongly on women's issues where she's been a leader, that's sort of the third part of the trifecta, let's call it. That's what I would do. That's what she started to do. It'll be interesting to see her expand upon it. If she does, I think she may legitimately be in trouble.
Nevada is supposedly Nevada, the Clinton campaign has said Nevada is now their firewall, as opposed to South Carolina, which I think is a very risky proposition for them.
That's dangerous. I thought they were going to downplay.
but they seem to, you know, I don't know, maybe they're putting out trial balloons, but they're talking about this guy, Mook, who's their big data guy in Nevada. But here,
I want to say one quick thing if I can. I mean, I'll stay on it because I don't want to leave without saying something positive about Bernie, because not because I have to, but I've seen it, which is, I think, and I don't mean this in any condescending way, I just mean this in sort of an exposure to what he hadn't been exposed to before, which is these national debates. I think he's gotten better and better.
Oh, yeah. She did 40 of these last round.
Improvement, and it's good, because if he's going to be the nominee, you know, which he may be, then I feel completely comfortable in a way that I didn't necessarily 2 months ago with him up there. I still would like him to get stronger in foreign policy and to become a little better versed. I still think that's an area, and again, that hasn't been his focus, and that's fine. But overall, you know, it's amazing. I think his people in preparing him have done a fantastic job, and whatever he's done a fantastic job. So I think that, you know, he seems like he legitimately belongs there on a stage next to her, you know, that they're both presidential. And I mean, other people may have felt that. I don't know that I would have said I felt that way a couple months ago about him. So, you know, that those are my thoughts overall about the debates.
Let me just put a final point on this Clinton thing. She has explained, it seems to me, why we should want her to be president, which is that she is eminently qualified. What she has not explained is why she wants to be president. And because I can answer that for Bernie Sanders. The reason why he wants to be president is because he has an issue set that he wants to tackle. You may disagree with it. You may not subscribe to it. You may get bored of it because it's one-dimensional in some way, whatever. she has been sort of like, she hasn't fully embraced, you know, women's issues, because that's a very hard thing for a woman to do. Because then all of a sudden, you know, in the same way that it would have been difficult for President Obama to say, I want to run because I want to focus on black issues. She can't do that. It's for better or for worse.
I do
she
think
can't
what she said at the end there was much better.
She's getting it. Yes,
I want. She still hasn't used the term, and she needs to find out. I'm not sure what the right language is, and I'm sure they'll test that. But she needs to basically say that I want to stand up for people who have not been afforded a quality of opportunity based upon, you know, the content. They haven't been, you know, the content of their character essentially hasn't been what's determined their fate. It's been the color of their skin, or it's been their gender, or it's been their, you know, I know what that's like. Yes, I've, you know, she has to admit I've lived, I don't know if she wants to use the word privilege, but I've lived a great life, and, you know, since whatever. But she, there was a period of time where she, like other people, was somebody out of law school who was dealing, you know, and in law school at a time when it wasn't a safe place for women to be. She needs to tell her story.
Well, that, but she needs to basically present an agenda to the American public. And my issue is that if she can't calibrate her campaign to beat Bernie Sanders, then the real question is electability. I mean, because I think it's perfectly legitimate for people to apply the electability argument to Bernie Sanders. I can disagree with the assessment of it. But, you know, her campaign has not been impressive. And she doesn't know if she's going to go up against Ted Cruz or Donald Trump. It is not predictable what anyone's going to face in the general election. And so if you're going to make an argument about electability with Bernie Sanders, you got to apply that same thing to Hillary Clinton. And her campaign has not shown that they have the ability to deal with any of this. And that
Had those issues. The only thing I'm disagreeing is I think she had those issue sets at the end there when she married voting rights and gun violence, when she brought in immigration, when she talked about LGBT couples. You know, and frankly, the fact that you can still get fired from your job for being gay, and God knows how many states, you know, probably 30 more. So, you know, to me, and that's an important group, and she should be speaking about that just because it's important. Forget politics. But if you're talking about the political side of things, she was starting to sort of marry the issues that have held African-Americans back, Hispanics back, and women back in this country. And that is where her experience is before she was a Clinton, or at least a Clinton meant
something.
Yeah,
but she's got she's got to universalize this. That's all. That's my point.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
No, and I'm agreeing with that. She's got to tell her story about how this affected her, how she understands it, who's holding people back, and why she'll be the one who will make these changes. She's got part of the story down now. She's got issues that make sense going together, and she's got the right groups she's speaking to, but she still hasn't put her story into it, why she's the person.
Right.
Beyond just experience. Why does she understand these issues? Why, you know, and that's what she needs to do. And I've said this to you before, I don't get how we're at the point now in February with this campaign, with the kind of people they have working on it, who've worked on so many, and that wasn't the first thing you do. Because when I sit down with any candidate ever on any race, and I'm not calling myself some kind of genius here, it's just, this is what they taught me to do. It makes sense, you know, and you see it in polling. You just, what's your message? Why you? Who are you running against? Who are you running for? You know, and how do the issues you're talking about fit into all that? So I can't fathom after 2008 that they went and did this again.
Yeah,
I
it's mean, very
it's
strange.
Amazing to me.
All right, well, listen, I wanted to get to Kissinger, but I'm going to have to talk about that later because I'm overdue to go call Mark Maroon now.
More criminal, crazy accent.
We're on vacation next week, so we'll talk to you in 2 weeks, Cliffy.
All right, look forward to it. Have a good break.
All right, thanks, buddy.
Take care.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to this guy from the Feline Show. Right back after this.
I'm the seventh son.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back on the Majority Report. My next guest, according to, let's see, I'm going to look him up on Wikipedia because my understanding is, and my experience has been, this is how he does his research when he introduces a guest, Marin, Latin, a 4th century Syriac Christian monk. Whose followers, after his death, founded a religious Christian movement that became known as the Maronite Church. And apparently now he's got a podcast. Yeah. Hello, Mark. Mark Maron, everybody. Mm-hmm. Welcome. Did you know about this guy, Maron?
Thank you, Sam.
Are you aware of this?
Sure. I've had many lives, Sam. And obviously, because of your lack of knowledge of that Maron, not a great success, but he tried. He had a small following. Enough to be called Maronite, and then he, he died and made his way to me. And again, small following, a little more popular, not religious in its foundation. But I keep coming back as different Marons trying to amass a larger following. It's a very weird thing.
You're not talking to us from the bathroom, are you? It really does sound. Are you stuck in the?
Do you need a minute? I'm on these dumb headphones that I got for nothing at the store. You wanted to call on the cell phone.
Well,
you
no, I'll call on your home phone.
My ear.
You want me to call on the home phone? Text me your home phone number, and I'll call you right back.
Okay, that means I got to go out to the garage. It's fine though, because I'll do that for you. It's just out back.
Do that.
Hold on a minute.
You want
me to text you the number?
Yeah. Sounds like he's like this is like on the libertarian call line.
I am. I'm self-generating it with a gas generator.
Mark,
I think he was
on the toilet, to be honest with you. Do you need to go back in and flush that, or you want to wait until after the interview?
I'm not. Hold on. I'll text you my home phone number. This is great radio. This is why podcasts are so great. I'll text you my other number.
Okay, do it.
All right, bye.
Bye, everybody. There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Maron, he's going, he could have stayed on the phone until I called him on the other line, but I do actually believe that he was in the bathroom. All right. Let's get this going here. I've never called this home phone number before. Or wonder if this is the studio number and I could actually interfere with his interviews. That would be pretty funny. Now, if I had called this when the president was in your studio, would I have interrupted the whole interview?
Probably, if the phone was on.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic. I've got to save this number.
Yeah, I don't think they shut off my electricity or anything. They did that was the weirdest thing about that whole experience, really, was they came like a week early, and in the second bedroom, which is the only other room in my house, they put these two large humming boxes that they had to have a special dude from AT&T come set up the isolated lines for if the world ended. And they needed to get in touch with him. So, like, for a whole week before the interview, there were just these two large boxes that they travel with that were isolated phone lines just sitting in there. It was eerie. That was the weirdest part of that whole experience.
Just so you had these two, I mean, did you contemplate, like, what if it, like, you were just in the middle of the night, all of a sudden it just starts ringing?
Well, there weren't phones connected to them, and I don't really know what the mechanics of them were. But they were just sitting in there, and they were important enough for them to install, like days before. There was no phone connected to them, but they were there. And then the guy, after the president left, did not come to remove all the wires he brought in. It was very aggravating. We had to call the White House to muscle AT&T to get the wires off of my house.
I can only imagine. I can already hear what you were complaining about. And you call Brendan and you would complain about it. Let me ask you this, though, Mark. Okay? Mm-hmm. It is now February of 2016.
Is it?
Here it is. 2015. You interview President Obama. You interview Keith Richards. You interview Mick Jagger. You interview me. Was 2015 the best year of your life? Honestly, I mean, was it the best year of your life? I have a feeling it was.
If I think and sit long enough to realize what happened, I mean, you know how this goes. You know, it was definitely a great year, and I had no. How would I ever know that any of that would happen? But it becomes very surreal. It's sort of a sad thing about the human brain is that, like, yeah, the president was here, and there was so much going into it, and it's just bizarre to me now. Like, I'm looking at my garage, and I'm like, did that even fucking happen? You know, it's like crazy. And Keith Richards, too, they were phenomenal experiences. I'm just concerned that my mind doesn't,
Definitely not. Of course not. I'm not saying that you would appreciate it in any type of emotional way or that it wouldn't be sort of, that's what I'm getting at, right? Like, last year was the peak. That was it for you.
I see what you're saying. You're not saying it was a great year. You're moving towards a broader theme of, like, what are you going to do now, stupid?
No. I was starting with, like, when you look back and you just go, like, you know, because this time of year in January, you look back and you say, that was a pretty good year. That wasn't a great year. This year might be better. But you got to look back on 2015 and say, that was the best year of my life, right? I mean, what was better? I've known you now for what? Like, I don't know,
25 years.
25 years. Yeah. I think that was...
It was pretty amazing, you know? I had a pretty great time, and I feel pretty good about... It. I think you're right, because you know what I've been thinking about lately? Like, so, all right, what now? Like, I spent my entire life kind of driving towards something, like trying to make something work, you know, just my entire life. All the energy has gone into, like, when do I get to, and why isn't this working? Like, all this energy is just trying to get somewhere, and now I'm pretty sure I'm somewhere, and so what do I do with all that energy? So I have to learn how to have a nice time, you know, or experience some fun. Yeah, I don't know what the hell to do next.
I'll tell you what you got to do.
Oh, is this going to be another partnership with me and you? Because I don't know if everyone wants that.
Well, listen, it can be a silent partnership. I mean, I think what you should do is turn around and support other programs.
Are you asking me for
money? Well, I mean, not directly. Services in kind would be good, too. I mean, it doesn't have to be cash. I would say my suggestion would be two-part. One would be to maybe just quietly... buy up virtually every potential membership on the Majority Report. I mean, just go in. Infinity. I mean, we have the capacity.
That's a big number.
Well, you don't have to. You want a goal. That's my point. Is that you don't want something that you're going to attain at this point. You need something long term, and then also probably meditate.
Yeah. Do you meditate?
No. God, no.
Oh.
No.
It's like we're doing the fourth season of Marin. Mm, I tried to write in, but there was a lot of pushback.
Really?
From who?
Dave Anthony?
I'm kidding.
Come on.
Yes. He's the only one, actually, and he threatened to quit, and I was like, it's Sam.
Yeah, but what would you lose if Anthony quit the show, honestly, seriously? I mean, let's be honest.
I lose my psychotic wall of a straight man.
Yeah, that's true.
What was I saying? Like, so, okay, we're shooting this, and after this is done, I just want to figure out, like, what the hell to do. So you want me to come out there and we'll co-host again?
No, I'm not saying that. Oh. God, no. If that's, I could come up, you know, with a little bit of HTML, I could set up a membership.
$75,000 a month.
$5,000 a month.
Is that what we're
looking
at?
75, so, but or five.
But let's just do. I'd like to, you know, do one of those things that, like, we used to do a classic Cedar and Marin show. You ready?
That technology.
So how's what?
That technology doesn't even exist anymore. In fact, I did though cut together
the technology for you and I to get along on air.
Oh no, that technology never existed. But I'm saying the one where we would, when I was upstate and you were in your kitchen, and we had the two screens.
That was crazy, dude.
I've cut together five of those for a fundraising campaign and went out to, I don't know, like a couple of dozen people, you know, bought mm-hmm. those, and they're interesting. They're not synced up necessarily.
Well, we were using all this weird stuff. There were new phones that we were trying to, all the stuff that we were trying to use at that time. You know, not only do they not work well and no one paid attention, but now they're just taken for granted.
Right. Now they're just like in your pocket. They're like, oh, yeah. I have one of those. It's on my watch. I could do everything that you bought, all that equipment and jerry-rigged and spent all that time trying to make not work. Yeah, I got it right here. I can just press a button on my watch and that's it.
That was so crazy, man. So what's going on? So you're upstate. How's the family?
No, I'm not upstate. I'm sitting in Brooklyn. That's where, remember, like, with that time that you performed at BAM? Yeah, I was right around the corner when you didn't stop by.
What do you mean? Didn't we hang out? I thought you came by and you wanted to get in. There was no room, and we had some coffee. What was? Am I making that up?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, you're totally making that up.
I didn't see you when I was in Brooklyn?
No.
Oh, see, like...
You're confusing me with... That's what I'm saying. Last year was the greatest year of your life. I mean, you're going around, you're going to Hawaii, then coming back to talk to the president, and then, Mick Jagger wants to call into your show, and Keith Richards, and now you got a new girlfriend, and like, you don't even know, like, I'm going to get a new Toyota, and...
Yeah, I'm living it. A new girlfriend and a new Camry.
And new Camry. And then your show gets picked up. I mean, come on. Did you think your show was going to last four seasons? No way.
No, I thought I would ruin it, two in.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought I saw you in Brooklyn. I must have some sort of, like, PTSD with you where, like, I hallucinate, an exhausting interaction with you when I'm in New York. As
you know what? That's what I've been saying has been happening with Jeb Bush with Donald Trump. It's like a shadow limb.
who's going to be president?
Wait, I thought you didn't. What you specifically said, you don't want to talk about politics.
No, I'd like to learn about politics. I don't want to talk about it. I just want you to answer the question in 7 minutes or less.
7 minutes or less? Who's going to be president? I mean, either I think Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump.
Really?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think those are the only three people who can.
I thought you would have a more definitive sort of like, oh yeah, it's going to be this person because of this, and I'm not really that happy about it, but if there's going to be a president, this one could work.
I'm not really, I don't know if I'm happy about it with all three of them. I mean, I think I'm never going to be happy until I'm appointed president, probably. It's the only time I'm
going to be happy. God. That would just be, to picture you as president at a press conference.
You know what the best part would be? Getting that call from Brendan, will you come and do Mark's podcast? Nope. Not gonna,
huh?
Not gonna do that. Nope. Sorry. Not gonna go.
That's a bad look for the Cedar presidency.
No way. Not gonna do that. I think, I don't know. Maybe I'll do Sporkful.
Sure. You could talk about,
I'll go do Dan Pashman's.
The integrity of roles.
So who are you gonna vote for? Have Joe Rogan come and do it, probably.
Sure, like, Rogan's podcast if you're gonna be president.
That's what I'll do. If I become
He'll
president,
really get to the bottom of things.
I'm gonna do Rogan. Oh, really? What do you mean by that?
No, I mean he's very thorough in his research. Right?
Is that what you meant? When are we gonna get the old Marin back? When's that going to circle back?
What are you talking about? He's right here. I feel fat. I'm uncomfortable. I'm sweating in my garage.
I know.
My cat has an abscess on his face. The only difference between me and the old Marin is that my house is paid off. That's the only difference.
Well, I disagree. I mean, like, look, I've always said Mark Maron is much more than body dysmorphia and his pets. Okay.
Have you said that publicly? I don't think so.
Many times. Well, certainly I've said it privately. I mean, because a lot of people ask me about that. Is it just about his body dysmorphia? And I'm like, no. It's also about like a compulsion to resent. And I feel like that's not, you're not as compelled to resent. Like, yeah, the inclination.
No, you're right.
But you're not
you're
as compelled.
Right. It happens in waves. It still happens, but it doesn't last as long.
I know. And
Like, I went through about an hour and a half of Berbiglia resentment yesterday for no reason.
Right. That was my favorite. One of my favorites of your resentment back from our old days.
What, the Berbiglia resentment?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that was great. Who have I had? There's certain people that were sort of classic Marin resent puppets that I've grown to respect and appreciate. You know what helped me, Sam?
Can we list them? Because, I mean, I would like to, you know what I would like you to do? This is what
I'd
like.
Why don't you list them, and I'll tell you if they're still on the list.
No, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to write down like four or five, okay, on a sheet of paper. Yeah. And then I'm gonna hold it up. I'm on YouTube. And so I want you.
How do I get it?
We go to, I don't know. It'll be online eventually. So I'm gonna list them. I'm gonna write them down to see if I can guess them, and then you name them off. Okay.
And, easy.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna do. And I want to say these are not in order. Okay. They're just coming to my head. Let's see. Who else? Oh yeah.
I think you'd be surprised about my new approach to some of the older resentments.
Well, okay, hold on for one second. There's two more. Who am I going to get?
Are you on there?
What's that? Am I on there? No. There was a time. I do remember a time. I'll put that as a 5A. During the... There was a couple of periods. Two periods of time I could put that down. Who else is... I just have the three biggies. Yes, I have those two. Michael was trying to help me out, but those are the two. Those are the low-hanging fruit. Let's see. I want to say, okay, and I'm going to go, this is just a shot in the dark. This one's not going to be right, but I just sort of feel like if you thought about it, you'd resent them. Okay. All right. All right. Okay. So I want you to name them off. What are the five? No, I'm going to hold mine up after he's... Oh, I can hold them up now. Okay. Yeah. I mean, so people can see them, but I don't want him to see them. So I want him to just say what they are.
I'm not watching. I don't even know where to watch.
Okay, good. So what do you got?
Well, the ones that are sort of recurring. Well, there's the classics. There's like, you know, Jon Stewart.
Number three on my list, Jon Stewart. Yeah.
Louis's been taken off, so that shouldn't be.
I didn't
put
Louis on there. Nope.
Yeah.
I know you can't afford to do that. You can't even afford to admit to that now, because that would be.
No, we're actually getting along great.
No, I know, I know. But okay.
You have four more?
Yeah, I got. Yeah.
See, even Jon Stewart's not. You know,
you can say Berbig. You can say Berbig.
Okay, here. Okay. Kumail, is he on there?
No.
Oh,
no. Who else? Come on, don't be afraid. I know. Come on.
I'm trying to go through them, but I don't like. I'm not. You know, I'm not entirely sure anymore.
All right. How about this? San Francisco. Come on. That's a little hint.
San Francisco.
Right. That's where it started with him, I think.
That's really?
Yeah.
God.
Oh, come on. Come on. Look at.
Tell me. Let's see how I react.
Look at these. No, that's not the point. Come on. Just throw them out there. You can just say it.
I don't think I have them like you think.
Well, then, all right. Then who you had, okay? How about that? Does that make it easier? Once in the past. So Jon Stewart, Berbigula, who else?
San Francisco, huh?
Well, he was a San Francisco guy. Now he's not, obviously, but.
Oh, my God.
All right. Don't think about San Francisco. Come on. This is obvious. Are you serious?
Maybe I'm just blanking. Yeah. Just tell me.
Patton Oswalt. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course. Are you kidding?
Yeah. 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 I got. Yeah. No, that one can be stoked up pretty easily.
Right. Yeah. Of course. Okay. And
but why don't we explore? Why don't we explore the reason? So I, because I don't want people to listen to this or them to listen to it. I want them to understand it.
Well, everybody understands it. Your whole career has been made out of that. It's just that, you know, it's you just resent other people's success. That's all.
Yeah. That's it.
Who else?
But I'm pretty successful now. I do all right.
I know, but it's knee jerk.
I make an honest living.
That's right. Yeah. No, you do very well for yourself. Now, you know what I also have? All right.
What?
Michael Ian Black.
But that's become sort of fake, you know. Like I don't like he actually aggravates me, which is different than resent.
Okay.
Like we end up doing these Twitter things. I'm so fucking tired of Twitter. It makes me feel bad. But we end up doing these Twitter things, and like I'm never good at fighting. You know that. Like you know, you do your little system of what is it called when you win an argument like you do? Is it what's the classic debate thing that you do?
Oh, when I take off my coat and roll up my sleeves and then like I'm like, no, I don't know what
no,
you're talking.
No, it's like it's a Greek philosopher's name, Socratic debate or
Socratic?
Plato, one of them. So whatever it is, like, you know, if I start engaging with Michael, it's been better lately. I really, like, if I see Michael, I'm not mad at him. I don't have any resentment towards him. I get mad when we hurt each other on Twitter. But when I see him, you know, I generally just feel a little sad, you know? So I don't, you know, it's not an active, I'm like, oh, it's not easy for that guy either. So that's usually what happens. And that's how I disarm a lot of my resentment is like, and that's one of the reasons why I think I do my podcast sometimes. It's like, oh, these people are just people. What do I got? Why do I got to do this? And also, I'm never going to be that guy. Like, Patton is a very brilliant guy. He's very funny. I enjoy his comedy. I like seeing him. I like making him laugh. But sometimes when I see his tweets, I go like, "Oh, are you fucking serious? You know, is this where you're going to be this guy?" So,
wait,
so
who is that guy when he's that guy?
Well, you know, it's just he's one of those guys that's got such a deep resource of references and interests. You know, like my interests. Like I don't know a lot of things, but I feel a lot of things. He seems to know a lot of things, and it feels to me like it's like we get it. You know that. I find that annoying. Sometimes.
Yeah, that's why I put on the list also Dimitri Martin, because I think that you get now, and I don't even know about that. That was just a shot in the dark because I really should have put also Hardwick on some level.
But Hardwick, you know, like here's how all that goes away. I'll teach you a lesson. Maybe some of your listeners. But I know that some of us, you know, who enjoy what you do and enjoy the point of view that we have, without our resentments or our sense of need for some kind of justice, you know, what are we really? So with Chris, it's like, yeah, Chris is rich and successful and seemingly, but, you know, that guy works his ass off in about a million different mediums. And what is that guy? He's all right. He's never going to be me. I'm never going to be him, and the world's probably better for it. I mean, if he wants to build an empire and be the nerd Ryan Seacrest, you know, he's worked very hard to do it, and let him do it. He's not hurting anybody. I actually like doing the Midnight Show. It's kind of fun.
Okay. All right. And
with Dimitri, I don't even know what that guy does now. He's all right. He came in here and we did some gigs together. He's all right. He's just naturally, you know, he's one of those guys you mistake for being aloof and condescending. And he's, you know, actually, you know,
just
aloof
shy.
And condescending. Oh. So, so, you know, there's a comfort in knowing that. But, you know, he's just a comic. And you know what's impressive about that guy is that we did those oddball things last year and we're performing for 20,000 people. And I don't think, like, he's got such a controlled point of view around how he writes jokes for himself. That he's literally doing new jokes in front of 20,000 people without really doing a big run on them in terms of working them out. He knows his voice that well. That you got to respect that. Who else?
Well, then I just had...
A lot of times people just annoy me, and it's not really that deep a resentment. You
I know
what I mean?
I know. I just thought, I'm surprised at the Patton thing, because, I mean, that was one of your all-time greatest hits. That was always.
You know, when it comes down to Patton, it's just sort of like I wish I had the time or the mind to indulge in all the things that he seems to enjoy. I wish I had the capacity for being, you know, that excited about so many fictional characters and cartoons. You know, and I, you know, what?
I just love it. I love it. I mean, I can't. You know, I don't even know if you like. I love that part about you when you. Are really think that you're like complimenting somebody. that's always been my, that's the part, that's the, like, for me, I could have just listened to every introduction on WTF that you ever gave somebody and not even have to listen to the rest of the interview. Just like, here's this guy, he's doing a lot of stuff, I guess he thinks he's doing well.
But, like, I'm always, like, here's the thing that I learned from doing WTF is I'm constantly, you know, the lesson of it all is that every they're just people, you know, and even, like, you know, it's like I get mad at myself when I talk about this kind of stuff, even to you, because, like, it's silly, and it's one of the reasons, and people know that I do this sometimes, but, you know, like Patton, I could call Patton, we have a nice conversation, we could have coffee, he'd probably help me out in a bind, maybe, like, he's a friend, but I'm not going to say, look, I'm fucking annoying, there's no doubt about that.
Definitely.
You're annoying. Well, we're all going to annoy somebody. Huh?
Well, good.
But like, who is it? Like, even just the other day, I put the Ben Hoffman episode up. That guy, Ben Hoffman, like, when he was doing the Ben show, I was like, yeah, this guy's annoying. Rubbed me the wrong way. Like, I literally, he was pitched. We had the same people at some point. And I'm like, I'm not going to talk to that guy. He seems like a real asshole. And then for some reason, like, he put out this weird country record. and he fooled me. Like, I got this record in the mail. I thought it was just a record that some label sent me. It's this Wheeler Walker Jr. record. And I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? This looks like a throwback to this 80s, this country record. And then it turns out it's Ben Hoffman. And I'm like, all right, you know, he got me. And I had this guy in here. And I love the guy. He was hilarious. He's like a Jew from the South, and we had a lot in common. But I misjudge. And then when I sit and talk to people, you know, we get along great. I like people, Sam. I'm just defensive, and sometimes when I talk negatively about people out of my own insecurity, it leaves a mark that it can never be repaired, and it's a mistake ultimately.
All right. Well, so there you have it.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Hold on. Let me give you a little of this. I feel like I should have been playing that underneath. So who are you going to vote for?
Well, I mean,
really?
We got. I'm going to vote for Bernie.
All right, I was just curious. I don't want to get any more political than that. But I mean, that's,
who are you going to vote for?
I'm Bernie. I will say this though, you know, that you know, when. And I see, like, just sort of the reaction I get from Myla, who, you know, when I talk to her about it, she becomes a little bit less, and she's not a voting age, so it's not terribly relevant. But, you know, the idea of a woman president is really, I think, very powerful. And
important. Man, it's like that's the thing I always deal with, because, like, I really don't pay attention to, you know, I've not watched. I literally, the only time I've watched 5 or 6 minutes of a debate, and that was just last night, was the was Bernie and Hillary, right?
Mm.
And I watched it because Dave Anthony was watching it on his computer. I've really remained detached from the whole thing. I love the idea of a woman president. I just like it as it is. You know, I like that idea. I think we should have that. But like, and then when I watch these debates for 5 minutes, I'm like, God damn it. They're all so like, it's almost impossible to see who they really are. Like, you know, Bernie tends to operate at a sort of an overheated level all the time, which mm-hmm. I can relate to. He's very expressive with his hands. You know, his face gets, you know, a little, aggravated. So there's a, I guess what I'm trying to say is there's a Semitic thing that I relate to.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it becomes, you know, very difficult in terms of, like, if he gets in, Sam, really, you know, how much of a prisoner is he going to be held by the Senate and Congress, really?
Well, I mean, I would imagine as much as she is. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, but presumably, I mean, if we have a Democratic president, there's a good chance, theoretically anyways, that we're going to have a Democratic Senate. But in the main, I think that they're going to be just as sort of handcuffed in some respects. And really then the big issue becomes about appointing. Who are they going to appoint? Who are they going to appoint to the Supreme Court? Who are they going to appoint to the Treasury Secretary?
Yeah, yeah,
appoint,
yeah, yeah.
And that type of thing. So I don't know. I mean, it's going to be...
It's so crazy. That was the interesting thing about my conversation with the president, however anybody felt about, you know, what I did or didn't ask him, was that his sense of optimism was really, you know, deeply rooted in his understanding that incremental progress, no matter how small, is the best that he could hope for.
Right.
Like, you know, and I thought he was pretty honest about that. You know what I mean? Like, how do you keep going, you know, given the situation you've been in for 8 years. And I really believed him that he said, look, if I can move it just a little, that's the way this shit works. Just a little, you know, towards, you know, put something more progressive or something that I can be proud of actually achieving on a legislative level, then that's great. So, you know, our expectations most of the time are outlandish given the system we're in.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's true too. I mean, and then the question is like, you know, does asking for more than incremental change, does that help you get incremental change or hurt you from getting incremental change? I mean, in other words, like, you know, even if there's an incremental increase on that increment, I mean, that I think is the question that a lot of people
that's
are.
That's a classic. That's a classic Cedarism. You should write that down.
I don't
even know what you said. It was something. There's incremental within the increment. I liked it. It went right by, but I think it's a real portal into your thinking.
Yes, I'm always looking for the crumbs. That's me. I'm a nickel and dimer. From an old-time nickel and dimer. That's basically...
That's a classic Cedar-esque broadcasting trope. There's incremental change within the increment. That's where you live. I just hope you know that.
I get calls for that all the time. Can you come on and do the incremental increment thing for us?
Well, you know, I'm hopeful, but, you know, the issue has always been, you know, even when we were doing radio on separate shows and talking about, you know, our point of view and what we think is right, is that you get to this point where it's like, what the fuck is wrong with people? Why doesn't everybody just, like, you know, get behind this so we can, you know, progress? And then you just don't you have a problem with the way that you get this feeling that if television could get as much juice running these debates with Trump, you know, year round, they would do it. When this weird sort of it's a sport, like it's some sort, like I'm doing it myself. I'm watching Hillary and Bernie for 6 minutes, and you're barely listening to what what they're saying. But you listen to him, and you're like, oh, he really should have brought up African Americans in that one, because now she's you're not even paying attention to what they're saying. You're judging this performance and this competition, and it just becomes a spectacle, and it's like it's ridiculous on some level.
I mean, the interesting thing is that part of it this year, I mean, it's been easier for me to accept that dynamic this time around, because for a large part because of that sense that the policies, I mean, we're in an era where our government doesn't work anymore, really. I mean, it's just simply not functioning the way I should. Let me restate that. We're in an era where our legislative process is broken. And
right.
And that is because we have a system that was set up via our Constitution that did not contemplate the radicalism we're seeing in the Republican Party. And the complete... They're completely unmoored, and Trump, I think, is a manifestation of that.
He's a Frankenstein. They made him
exactly, and they're completely unmoored, and so it really does become about now sort of affecting the political culture as much as
it does
about legislative. And so the questions about performance and the way that and the rhetoric becomes even that much more important now. That's my theory, and that's what I'm telling myself. Maybe it's just a rationalization, but I've usually during this process I'm far more sort of like disgusted and detached, and I actually see implications in this race that and not for the near term, but maybe the midterm.
But I like, well, there's a persistence on, you know, and also changing, the cultural memes around government. And I think that, you know, from what little I saw of Bernie yelling, that, you know, sort of constantly pounding the existence of a real class issue in America, you know, maybe someday that'll register.
Yeah, I think it is. And not necessarily across the board, but it's definitely registering. And, you know, just like... Last night, he called in the last debate.
Yeah.
Hillary said Henry Kissinger is a supporter of mine. And
so that's like saying I talked to Satan this morning.
Right.
And he's in.
Well, in particularly in a Democratic race, but yes. And Bernie, I think the campaign sort of wisely waited until this for this debate to raise it. And he said, look, Henry Kissinger is not a friend of mine. Yeah. And I say that with as much pride as Hillary said. I'm not quoting what he said, but I say that with as much pride as Hillary said he is a friend of hers. And and it was fascinating to see on Twitter. I started seeing all these retweets of sort of like guys like Michael Beschloss. You know that guy who was on PBS? He's like the presidential historian. The consummate sort of like almost institutional political groupthink on some level, not in the day-to-day, sort of 20,000 feet and saying, and he tweeted something that was sort of like a joke. And I noticed there was a lot of guys, and they're guys mostly, who tweeted stuff like that. And I think it was just one of those.
What was the joke?
Well, I can't even remember what the joke was, but it was this sort of like Kissinger, like, you know, who knows what he's talking about listening to the thing and or what it is. And it was all this sort of like uncomfortable thing of like everybody, like all of a sudden in the biggest venue. I mean, think about this. This is the biggest venue where you have seen anybody who has any sort of like even quasi-establishment bona fides. You're running for president. It's one of you two standing on that stage who's going to be the Democratic nominee, right? This isn't like the eighth guy on the end.
Right.
And saying and calling out Henry Kissinger and having as much time as he wants to make that case and making that case and on PBS of all places too, frankly, which is like, you know, the epicenter of, we're not going to speak badly of Kissinger here, and we are, you know, objective. It made all of them, you could feel the uncomfortability, like, please don't point out the fact that we've been, you know, having a tea with, you know, with Satan, or, you know, it's an exaggeration, but with a guy who's like, you know, literally holding the teacup with, you know, blood dripping off his hands. And that, to me, like, there's a tremendous cultural value to that. And I think that's why their response was so fascinating, that it was just sort of like playing it off like, oh, can,
yeah, it's like it, but it's completely detached, you know, as much as someone like Hillary is on some level, you know, from, you know, the real experience of people that aren't that informed and are really trying to figure out, you know, who's going to be, you know, the best candidate for their needs.
Yeah, that had nothing to do with it. It was playing out on like, I mean, I don't even know why if you're Hillary Clinton, why you think there's any value in saying Henry Kissinger. I mean, maybe in a general election you'd say that because you want to appeal to, I don't know, you know, some type of, you know, facsimile to Reagan Democrats or something like that. I don't know.
Right.
But
you know, it's weird though. What I noticed last Democratic night on the,
yeah, go ahead.
What I learned last night on the debate is that, you know, these candidates they're a lot like road comics. Like, you know, when a road comic goes to a place he's never been before, he's like, okay, so where's the, you know, where do all the rednecks live? Or what's the shitty part of town? They get this geography. So like in a pinch, if they have to do crowd work, they can get some easy jokes, you know, from, you know, sort of knocking the city they're in. Like, and I noticed that Hillary goes and she just has her people like, okay, so give me a list of the most recent police brutality things here and some names. And who are our local people here that are on our team? And like, there's this research that goes in so she can appear, you know, sort of connected. They all do it, you know, like, you know, I love Minnesota, whatever it is.
Well, you know who does that the most? I mean, have you ever seen a Trump speech?
He is a little bit.
Consummate road comic. I mean,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
And not even like the political version of a road comic. He is like a road comic. It's fascinating. He's got his macros that he goes into, but for the most part, he's a road comic, and it's fascinating.
He's doing really well. He kills out there. He kills. He's got his audience, and he just does a little crowd work. He
sells merchandise.
Yeah, he's got merch.
Fully merched.
He's one of the great American assholes, Sam.
It's true. It's true. He's got, but he's got red scarves that say "Make America Great Again," which is amazing.
But the funny thing is, it's like, you know, there's always been Trumps. You know, he is like, on some level, for a lot of people, he's classically American. He's like this, like, you know, this big mouth American huckster that, you know, elevates people through just, you know, these horrible hate jokes, and it's very exciting to angry people.
That's true. It's true.
All right. I don't know what's going to happen. It's a travesty. But it's exciting, and I think we should talk occasionally, because I feel better. I'm up to speed on you know, the part of the incremental issues that I can sort of wrap my brain around. But I do think you're doing a great job with the incremental within the increment. I still think that you're the guy for that.
No, yeah, someone's got to be at the margins of the margin, just in between that and the margin.
All right, buddy.
All right, Mark, thank you so much. Good luck with the rest of your show. Still time to bring me out there. How many episodes do you have to shoot left?
Left? Yeah. I think we still got like six more.
Available.
Available. Yeah. Are you adverse to, you know, playing maybe a smaller character that isn't you?
No, I'm totally open to that.
We got we're currently casting an off-camera line. Is that...
It's union work. In.
I'm kidding. I would have written you in if I could.
Well, it's still time, is what I'm saying.
Okay, I'll talk to the guys today.
Yeah, you should.
But don't get your hopes up.
I'm not gonna. I'm just saying there's still time.
Okay, buddy.
All right, do it.
Bye.
Bye. All right, folks. It's going to be a freebie Friday. I don't know what to tell you. We only have another 15 minutes because we got to do a pre-tape at 2 for next week. I will just say this. Jeb Bush apparently has just hit Mark Maron over Mark Maron's support for Medicare. And Medicaid.
I mean, you know, WTF? I mean, come on.
Sorry.
WTF? I mean, come on. I could do a better... Oh, my podcast is over? Streaming done? Oh, okay. All right. They're kicking me off.
They're kicking me off.
They're taking down my stream. Gotta go get my mom massage.
John Kasich hit over expanding Medicaid expansion. Kasich says Medicaid's it's saving lives, and Bush says he shouldn't have done it. He shouldn't have done it. So there you have it. That is,
Come on. How many more poor, you know, minority kids you need running around?
Scorched earth.
Scorched earth, man. You know.
All right.
I'm sorry.
I didn't get to any
when
of the
it comes
sound
to letting
today.
Poor kids die.
Just not being a good host. I haven't done any of I haven't done any of the stuff on my list.
You're not following best practices.
Let's hear the Jimmy Reefer Cake song. I'm not going to blow that.
Wow. Hey, little girl, is your daddy home? Or is it stuck in traffic? I'm holding the cone. Revenge is what I desire. I'm a big, fat governor liar. Is your Democrat mayor doing good for you? He can't do the things to you that I do. Hurricane relief that you desire. I'm a big fat governor liar. Yeah, I gotta lose some weight. Sometimes it's like someone took a knife, baby, edgy and old, did liposuction and sucked out my soul. At night I wake up with the sheets soaking wet, the smell of meatballs and lasagna farts wafted in my head. I should resign, I should retire. Big fat governor liar. Yeah, I'm a big fat governor liar. Oh, woe is me.
Oh, boy.
It was a fantastic job. You did a tremendous job.
That was my favorite ever.
That, I got to say, that is a classic. If we have a best of, I want that in there. That is, of course, a parody of I'm on Fire from the Nebraska album, was it? Was it from the Nebraska album? I don't know if it was from Bruce Springsteen's Nebraska album, but it was from one of Bruce's, and of course it was singing about Chris Christie. I would have, if I had to change one thing, I would have taken that last verse, made a little less about his girth and more about the politics of Chris Christie, but I thought that was tremendous. All right, let's go to some of the IMs. Northern Star, I've been seeing complaints bringing up Kissinger, the Iraq vote is not relevant in terms of the foreign policy challenges. That to me is just bizarre. First off, Hillary Clinton brought up Henry Kissinger. You don't bring up Henry Kissinger because he's got a good consulting firm. You bring him up because ostensibly this guy has made decisions and has followed and created foreign policy frameworks that you are aligned with. And Sanders was giving a corrective to that, those foreign policy frameworks, saying that, you know, even if you think he is a smart thinker about foreign policy, his smart thinking kept leading to actively disregard the lives of thousands upon thousands of people. And so I think that's just, I think it's bizarre. And frankly, the Iraq war vote, to talk about foreign policy challenges today that don't include the implications of that war is also ridiculous. That doesn't mean necessarily that her vote is disqualifying. But if you're going to argue about your bona fides, how do you really, was it that long ago? I will remind people the Iraq war took place after 9/11, which nobody says. Like, 9/11, why are you still bringing that up? Ridiculous. Ex-Coletra, hello, Majority FM. The DNC just rolled back the ban on contributions from federal lobbyists. Oh, that's great.
Classic Schultz.
AJS. Oh, wow, this is a little bit... I actually find watching a debate is a bad indicator for what information an undecided voter will base their eventual decision on. These people aren't actually watching the debate. People watch the debate already have their minds up. You have to look at the post-debate coverage, and it was almost hilariously anti-Sanders. Yes, I think that's true. I can't read all of that, though, AJS. I'm sorry. I just don't have the time. Impetikinina, you say 98%... You said that you guys are 98% supported by your members. Isn't that really painful? Matt Hack, Bobby Jindal aftermath in Louisiana. New Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards announced Thursday that if state legislators were not able to agree and pass a set of tax hikes, universities across the state would be forced to shut down before the semester ends, and athletics, including high revenue producing programs like LSU football, would be put on hold. Interesting. Interesting. Special place in hell. Bernie will be participating in Black America Forum today in North Minneapolis. You can live stream here.
Ungawa Black Power.
Chris Lepaco. Hillary wants to be president so she can finish the work that Barack Obama couldn't. He saved the auto industry, turned the economy around, and killed Bin Laden. What's left? Get money out of politics. By the way, I saw Mike Maroon at the Chuckle Bucket in 85. He bombed. Progressive. Please, Jesus, end the call with Maroon by saying we've got to go. Yeah, the media keeps talking as if Bill Clinton is this awesome campaigner and thinks it's Hillary's secret weapon. I don't think that's the case at all. I tend to agree.
Really?
I think it's been too long, frankly.
You could tell even in 08 that he just wasn't sort of up to date with the media landscape at that time. And
yes.
And I think that you can see it. And also he's... And I don't mean this in any, I mean, he's looking like Yeah, his stamina is like
he's old and he's been out of politics.
And he's
that impacts.
I think he still knows how to, obviously, like in 2012, he made an amazing case for Obama. But I don't think on the sort of day-to-day understanding of the electorate, he's just not as sharp.
Agreed. Good rundown with Cliff. As always, adding convo with Taibbi. So now that the circus trap is folding, we see that the problems will be for Hillary Rodham Clinton, whether she faces Cruz or Trump. I think Cruz is a bigger problem. I don't think Cruz is as big of a problem for her as Trump. I think she could still beat Trump. I'm just saying that he's such a wild card. You and Marin, strange alchemy, but I love it. DX Fool. By the way, AT&T Universe subscribers rank the interview with Marin one of AT&T's buzz best. Do you know if the other comedians from Albuquerque like Dana Goldberg and Neil Patrick Harris? I don't know. Joe Ballin. Sanders gets props for bringing up Henry Kissinger. Second, he started mentioning Cambodia. You could see the look at her face. She's one of the worst neocons of all time. Okay. Can't go through the whole thing. Sorry. Mark in the A10 conspiracy theory. Marin on the toilet? He never denied it. Neff, check the mail for fascinating article. When Mormons weren't considered white. Happy Valentine's Day to you, Neff. Jez Garjley. Mark sounded high, but I'm all for bringing back Marin V. Cedar. Doug. Okay. Wow. Too much, Doug. I can't read all that. A crazy old socialist is what you get. I'm another day older and deeper in debt. Sam, if Trump becomes president, will you abandon your progressive dogma and then start being objective about the issues? No. Sam, here's a song for you. I was born one morning when the sun didn't shine. Okay. I can't. I'm sorry. Doug, I'd like to read it, but I can't. Joe Mauve, you should snub Marin by doing an Adam Carolla podcast. Nathan Ray, it's amazing how many hits classic Marin resent puppets gets when you Google it. Old word communist. As a good communist, I went to bet Victor and threw down 50 euros on Sanders winning the election 7-1 odds. So by November, I'll be getting 400, hopefully. Great leap forward. It's virtually impossible for Clinton to set any real agenda unless it involves a root and branch change in the political establishments. No, you can set an agenda. I'm just talking from a campaign standpoint. Like, I'm not going to appreciate it, frankly, as much as others might. But you still can articulate something. Nick, Sam, have you seen the the article in the February-January issue of The Atlantic magazine of Mark Maron, the ex-suicide? Nick, no, I haven't. M. Red, if you watch Trump speak and realize he's using the royal we, it all makes sense. We will make America grand. So win so much. With his ego, he's saying, I will. Lou Kane, great guest yesterday. Loved it. Another facet of the subject is by the way the Army promotes their goals through propagandist indoctrination. The building of the Army family occurs in even every Army course and briefing to the point where it really becomes mentally ingrained. Bad Idea Society. Ask Mark when we can expect another season of Comedy Central Short Attention Span Theater. Carl Sagan, your comment on the institutional acceptance of Kissinger, it kind of makes me think that Bernie is the last hippie. The last spark from the 60s igniting a new fire. Interesting. Please cover Alex Jones' hatred of Sanders. It's hilarious. Yeah, we got to get to that. Beanbag, the guy you have on is a dick. In the Sticks. Bravo, Jimmy. Bravo. Lawyer Matthew. I'm on fire is from Born in the USA. Thank you. Mnipsky, bra, those dorks last night was so weak. No one even talked about waterboarding. Taco Truck. I wish Chris Hitchens could weigh in on Bernie Sanders. Reagan in the Money without Doug. Greetings. I made a YouTube channel for Doug and my new show. It's the same as my I Am name. Send us an email. Slow No Man. If snakes could talk, what would they say? Dane Cook, what is it? What do you think about the not Jewish enough tax on Bernie? It's weird. That's also BS, too. Pool Pro, I tweeted a link of a clip of you and Cliff to Bernie Sanders saying that you had very strong advice for Bernie's campaign. I think they checked it out and followed your advice by addressing the Kissinger issue. I don't know if that's, I find that hard to believe. But if they did, great. Flood myths. Hillary Clinton now wants to fight money in politics, but also claims that taking huge donations from corporations doesn't corrupt her. How can she possibly reconcile these two viewpoints? Obama said something like that. I'm swimming in muddy waters. I just don't want to. Jesus was a lefty. All the polling says undecided Democrats are very swayed by the debates. That I am was wrong. Interesting. Clincher, do you get more of a kickback from just coffee for the Majority Report blend, or is it just the coupon code? No, actually, we get a kickback for both. So, yes, you can double it. And I actually like that majority blend. Where's majority support? Where's the imitation of Bernie coughing last night? That was pretty amazing. I hope he's not too... I hope he's... It sounds like he got a cold. Liberal Atlanta. Sam, you said the next president will probably appoint 1 to 3 justices to the Supreme Court, but given the history of the past Senate appointments, do you really think Republicans will approve any liberal judge? Even if they lose a majority, it won't get to a filibuster-proof majority. They can only filibuster so many without the pressure building on them. I mean, that's just the fact. Remember, these are senators, not congressmen. Brooklyn in the house. I love when Marin's on. Makes me feel so much better about myself. Matt Newmat's music selection is on fleek. Censorship. See Chris Matthews and Jonathan Capehart discussing Sanders' campaign dishonesty over the old photo from the University of Chicago. Sanders, it might have been someone else, but the university said it was Sanders until recently. I know, they're acting as if this is some big deal. That's ridiculous. Ben, over. Hector. Mark is certainly right. There's been always been Trumps, but there's been touched on before this very show that there hasn't really been a candidate to truly tap into the facets of conservatism while they find appealing. Wealth, belligerence, bigotry, which falls back to the greatest longer narrative of reactionary politics that seems to me have a root in the lost cause of Southern Confederacy. The war is long and gone, but the underlying battle has endured. Lynn, hello. Would you like to even consider doing a random rush except with Sean Hannity? He's not on when we're on. Mel, Hillary points out that our candidate, she's not a single-issue candidate. However, the overwhelming influence of money in politics is the reason why Congress is in gridlock. Majority Report, Zach, I am just called Hillary's history greatest monster. You guys still deny Bernie Bros exist? I think that people calling Henry Kissinger Satan, too. I don't think they're anti-Semitic. I mean... Valette. I mean, people, yes, but I got news for you. The stuff that I heard about Barack Obama from Hillary supporters in 08, the stuff that I heard about Hillary from Obama supporters, far worse than this.
No, I don't like the notion. I mean, I agree that that's an overblown statement, but that's on the merits. He didn't say any offensive word, I don't agree, but that's not a Bernie bro comment. That's a exaggerated critique for foreign policy.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Well, Valletta, you want to recommend Kissinger's Shadow again, especially the great audiobook you had author Greg Grandin on, must read before endorsing Hillary. That's a good point. Kissinger's Shadow. I would also add that that guy who emailed, I mean, who IM'd, is not from this country. I'll tell you that right now. Jay Tingle, did I miss Triumph the Incel Comic Dog? No, he'll be on next Friday. We're going to do a pre-tape, actually, in a couple minutes. Dude, what was your favorite line from the debate last night? I think it was Henry Kissinger, not my friend. That was it. It was pretty sexist. Ivana, Hillary lies on big money, yet he wants it out of politics. No logic. Ronald Reagan, trying to call in from Skype. I'm sorry. I don't have time for calls today. In fact, this is the final IM of the day and the week. Michael will be here live on Monday, and we'll have new shows for you all of next week. Have a great one, folks. This one's from Loki. Will someone be checking the mail next week? Had a bumper crop of oranges and looking to unload some, but if they sit too long, they might go bad. Someone will be here on Wednesday of next week, so if they get here quick. All right, folks. Thanks, and we'll see you, Michael, on Monday. See you in a week. Bye.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes?
takes you. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. The months shifted into years, while I shifted in and out of.